Welcome to the Incredible Eyes Show, where we explore the latest developments, best practices, and real-world success stories of IBM's premier platform for enterprise computing. Whether you're a seasoned IBM professional or just getting started, this is the place to stay informed and inspired. So join us as we dive deep into the world of IBM i and discover the true power of this cutting-edge platform for business excellence. Hey, a special shout out to all our awesome sponsors, Infor, Connectria, Common, and Midrange Dynamics North America. Thank you so much for supporting the Incredible Eyes Show. Hey everyone, welcome. We are delving into the dynamic realm of IBM i with our esteemed guest, Dan Magid. Together, we'll challenge the misconceptions surrounding the IBM i platform and illuminate its modern capabilities perfectly aligned with today's technological landscape. Join us as Dan shares strategies for harnessing IBM i's reliability and security while embracing innovation in mobile, web, and IoT. Learn how to integrate modern tools like Azure DevOps and Git. It's time to unlock the boundless potential of IBM i. Welcome to the show, Dan. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. I have an awesome guest for you today, a guest that I've been trying to get on this show for a little while now, and he's finally here. Welcome to the show, Dan Magid. Hello.
Thank you, Peg. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to being on the show.
Yeah, me too. You know, we bump into each other at trade shows every once in a while. A customer might be looking at, you know, both of the products or the services we sell. So I know you've been around in this space for a long time, and I'm really excited to hear your story and share your story. Want to start with you talking a little bit about Dan and how you landed in the IBM i space, your history. I know you've got a great story to share with everybody. So let's go ahead and just start a little bit about you.
So it's kind of funny how I ended up at IBM. Now I am a legacy. My father was an IBM employee way back in the 50s and 60s. He worked for IBM back in the days when you wired the boards rather than writing programs. So I've a sort of a history with IBM. My older sister also worked at IBM, but I was taking a very different path. When I was in college, I was a theater arts major. So I was doing musical theater in college. And I was getting close to graduating. And I'm trying to think about what did I want to do and did I really want to be a starving actor? And I was walking through the engineering building at UCLA, and I took computer classes while I was in college just because of my father's background. And I happened to see a little flyer on the wall that said that IBM was going to be on campus interviewing for internships the next week. And so just on a whim, I pulled the flyer down and figured out where to go and went to interview. And they interviewed a few thousand people across all of the UCs. And so I thought, well, this is going to be really hard. But it turned out that the woman who interviewed me from IBM was from the same small town in New Jersey that I had lived in for 6 years, in Westfield, New Jersey. And so while my dad was actually working in Manhattan for IBM. And we just talked about Westfield, New Jersey. We didn't talk about anything else.
Oh my God.
And I ended up getting hired. didn't have much to do with my technical capabilities or anything. It's just that we kind of hit it off. And so I went to work as an intern, and I worked for IBM as an intern for the summer. And then after the summer was over, they offered me a permanent position. And so I went to work for IBM in their office in Reno, Nevada. So they gave me the choice of Reno, Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, Sacramento, California, Los Angeles, or Fresno. And I was an avid skier, so I thought, oh, gee, Reno will be right next to Lake Tahoe. It'll be great. Yeah. So I took the job in Reno, Nevada, and spent the next few years of my career selling computer systems to casinos and other kind of Nevada-based businesses.
Okay, so was it system 36s, 38s? What were you selling?
Oh, you're way too modern.
Oh.
I started out selling system 34s. So you could you could buy a system 34 with either 9.6 or 13.1 megabytes of disk and 128K or 256K of memory, and it cost you $250,000.
Oh my gosh, my phone has more than that. Today.
Your crazy? Watch has more than that,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I had no idea, Dan, that was your background. That is crazy. I love hearing the stories of a lot of the folks in this market, how they have, you know, their legacies. You know, their parents worked at IBM. You remind me, or actually, it's Mark Irish, who actually was in school doing something else. And, you know, his dad was like, you're going to do what? His dad worked at IBM, you know, and now Mark works at IBM. It's just, I love this. This is so great. So you sold hardware. But
So it's very funny when you go through back then, IBM put you through a year of training. So you went through an entire year where you didn't do anything productive. You just went to class, and you would and so they took everybody who had come in as a new employee in that part of the business. You went through a year, and at the end of the year, the very last 3 weeks, they would decide, did you go to sales school or did you go to systems engineering school? So you'd either become a systems engineer or a salesperson, and it really wasn't determined until those last 3 weeks. All the rest of the curriculum was exactly the same. At the last 3 weeks, I was put onto the sales track rather than the systems engineering track.
Okay, I understand that. I understand that. You're very dynamic. So
I think it was a punishment because during the final exam on programming, they had actually put me on the system console on the system 34. You know, everybody else was on terminals. I just happened to be given the system console, and I changed the priority of all my jobs so that my compiles would run faster than everybody else's.
And
naturally, the instructor happened to notice that I'd done that. So.
Nice. Oh my gosh, I love that. So, okay, so you go from selling hardware to developing software. Talk about that transition.
Well, so I worked for IBM for 5 years.
Yep.
And at the time, my father had left IBM and had founded his own company, and which I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of, which was Alden.
Yeah.
You know, he is the Al of Aldon. Was Alan Don, and he had this company, but at the time they were selling software to the HP 3000 marketplace. And I said, gee, you know, you probably ought to look at selling that in the IBM IBM mid-range, because a lot of customers could use the software that you had, the, you know, software development tools. Mm-hmm. And so I started helping him out and giving him advice and how to get into the IBM marketplace. And I was spending an hour or two a day, then it was 2 hours, 3 hours. And I started to spend a lot of time. Finally, I said, you know what, I need to just leave and do this full time. And so I left and went to work with my dad at Alden. And I was at Alden for most of the rest of my career.
Yeah. Yeah. Until you guys sold it to Rocket, right?
So originally, actually, we sold it when my dad was ready to retire. You know, he was 80 years old, and he said it's probably time to stop going to work every day. So he sold the company to a private equity group, and the private equity group then sold it to Rocket.
Oh, I got it. Okay. Yeah. And then, so how many years were you a part of the Rocket team? I'm sorry, the Alden team.
So Alden would have been, let me calculate this out, 25 years.
25 years. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good for you. And now, and you're still in that software vein, right? You've got a new company. It's Iridani. Talk about Iridani a little bit and the products that you have there.
So Eridani, you know, I decided to found Eridani with some partners out of Rocket Software back in 2019. It's just, you know, I really wanted to get back into the entrepreneurial thing. And I like working. Rocket's a great company. And I like doing the entrepreneurial thing. I like it being in my own company. So we decided to found to Eridani in 2019. And we really were looking at, I think, a little bit about what we want to talk about today, which is, there's this misperception in the marketplace about the IBMI that it is somehow old and can't work in the new technology environment. You know, we hear companies who are saying, gee, you know, we have to get off the platform because it doesn't support all the things that we want to do. And the reality is, you can do anything on the IBMI, you can do on any other platform. It's just, there can be difficulties in crossing the architectural divide because, you know, the IBMI grew up long before all these new technologies were available, and it has an architecture that wasn't really designed for them right out of the chute. And so what we needed to do is say, okay, well, how can we make it easy to be able to work with a mixed environment where the IBMI plays like everything else? And so that was really our objective, to say we can help customers cross that divide so that the IBMI isn't this sort of outlier that doesn't do what everything else can do, that it can do everything that every other platform can do.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just the fact that it is the most secure, you know, the most reliable, scalable, all the other availables that, you know, it can do everything. So why wouldn't you use it? You know, to house all your data? Why wouldn't you use it to protect all your financials?
Well, and it is study after study has shown it's the lowest cost of ownership box is out there. You know, people, it amazes me how companies often underestimate the cost of people. You know, when you're running an IBMI, we run into IBMI shops that are running the whole system with, you know, a fraction of a person. And then we go out and we look at these Linux and Unix and Windows environments, and, you know, they have a whole staff of people running the network. And you look at, it's such an easy machine to run. It's the ROI, the cost benefit is just too great to walk away from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and you probably run into this a lot as well, is, you know, we've got, an aging population, you know, in the IBMI space. And so they're, you know, company owners are trying to figure out, you know, who's going to take care of my hardware now going forward. And so there seems to be a lot of lift and shift, you know, let's get off the platform. But this proven platform that's been running proven applications and, you know, really driving the business for how many years, all of them, why not find a solution, move to the cloud, get some managed resources, get some, you know, developers, hire developers to actually continue to help drive the business, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that the whole cloud thing with the IBMI has been a wonderful innovation. We, you know, at Eridani, we don't have any IBMIs. All of our IBMIs are running in the cloud, and it's great. We can, you know, easily spin up a new instance. We can make a snapshot of one of our existing IBMIs and just spin up another one if we need to do that. We do that for testing all the time. We do it for training for customers. We'll actually spin up their own IBMI instances. So it's incredibly powerful technology. And again, no reason you can't do that with the IBMI, just like you do it on Amazon with, you know, Windows and Linux servers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm always curious, you know, why has it just stuck, you know, to the poor AS400, to IBMI, that it is just legacy when it's not legacy? You know, if people are running Power 10s, they're explosive. They're fast. They're secure. They're the best. It's the best chip out there. You know, the best hardware out there. It's less expensive. I guess I'm just trying to understand why we continue to battle these misconceptions about the platform.
Right. And I think, I mean, part of it is the wonderful contract that IBM made back in the days when I was selling IBMI systems, you know, so many, many years ago, IBM made a contract basically with their customers that said, if you write applications for this platform, they will continue to run forever. Basically, we will always support them. They'll always be backwards compatible, which is not true of every other platform. And every other platform, as the technology moves forward, you got to rewrite your applications. You know, if you went from 32-bit Windows to 64-bit Windows, you rewrote everything. Yeah. The IBM I, you just basically did the re-encapsulation process and kept moving forward. You know, when you went from 32-bit CIS to 64-bit RISC, there really wasn't much to do.
Yeah.
So I think that becomes a double-edged sword because you're never forced to move things forward. So you can say, well, you know, I'd like to put on a graphical user interface on our application, but I don't really have to. I won't do it right now. And so you end up with many, many applications that are still running as green screen applications because you can. There, you never had to move.
Yeah. And you know what? And so we're running into a lot of that now, right? Where we've got, you know, applications that are 25, 30 years old that customers still run, but now they need to modernize. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about integrating, you know, that modern technology into that user business process. What have you experienced out there?
So I want to first address the whole sort of modernization thing, because I think there's a misconception about modernization. There's this idea that like we're going to modernize. And, you know, today we're here, but tomorrow we'll modernize and we'll be there. When modernization is what we do, it's what we do in IT. It's what we do in development. You know, when my first job before I worked at IBM was loading punch cards into a card sorter. So all your data was held on punch cards. And then I got a job at a public TV station doing data to disk data entry, where we were storing on disk. And it was a huge innovation because suddenly you could store, you know, 500 boxes of punch cards on one little disk. And so it was a much, much more efficient way to do things. And then we got green screen terminals. Green screen terminals in their day were a huge innovation. And then you got client server computing. Then you got the web. Then you got mobile. Then you got Internet of Things. You know, now you have AI and APIs. Modernization is what we do. So there's never going to be, gee, I'm going to modernize and then I'm going to be done.
And then you're going to be done. Right. Yeah,
I think it's a mistake to say, okay, we're going to replace the system because then we'll be modern. No, you're going to actually just embark on your next modernization journey. We talk to customers who are currently modernizing their JavaScript applications. It's like, well, how can that be? You know, it's brand new. Well, you know, if you wrote things in Angular 1, you're now rewriting all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So modernization is something that we continue to do and we're going to continue to do. And for us, the important thing is to make it so that whatever comes down the pipe, it will work with the IBM I. That you can use it on the IBM I, you can take advantage of it. So you're not trapped in some sort of legacy box. You're actually in a highly cost-effective, highly reliable, highly secure server that you can use with whatever technology comes out.
So that's all great. I love everything.
It's a great story,
said.
Right?
It is. It is a great story. But for a lot of users out there, they just don't even know how to get started. You know,
right?
They don't know what to do.
And there are real challenges, right? There mm-hmm. I take personal responsibility for this because back in the after I did my sort of stint in the field at IBM, I did some executive education there where I would teach classes to system administrators and to CIOs and CEOs about technology. And when the System 38 came out, I used to teach a class on application architecture for the System 38. And we told people, don't write lots of small programs that call each other. Write really big monolithic programs because that is how you will optimize the performance of this system. The problem is that today, where we have very performant systems, we still have these huge monolithic programs. We've got programs that are, you know, 30,000, 50,000, 100,000 lines long. You know, an entire business process encapsulated in a program. And that can be a big challenge to say, okay, so now I want to break off little bits of that and put a web interface on it.
Right.
Or put a mobile interface on it. Or I want to call out to APIs from it. And you have to figure out, so how do I get around that sort of monolithic program issue? So that is a real challenge.
Well, and I think, you know, I had Jesse on one time, I think it was Jesse, who said, you know, when we're talking about modernizing and looking at different open source products or different tools, make sure that you're using the best tool for the job. And there are so many great products out there, so many great open source applications to you, products to use.
Exactly. And that, yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say that I agree with Jesse completely that you should go out and use the best tool for the job. So if you look at, for example, you know, you have Git that everybody in the world is using for source control, right? I think there's 100 million plus Git repositories on GitHub alone, and there's, you know, GitLab and Bitbucket and all these other places you can host, and there's over 100 million developers using Git. It's a incredibly powerful source management tool, and there's no reason why IBM I users shouldn't be able to take advantage of it. And to me, it's also a critical key to the future, because when hiring new developers, you know, especially if you've moved to free format RPG, new developers can learn the language. It's just another language, and they learn new languages all the time.
All the time.
It's the it's the tool set that's hard for them to learn. If they have to learn, you know, tools that they're not used to, and you have to work with editors, so they have to work in, you know, PDM and SEU instead of Visual Studio Codes, that's going to really be a struggle for them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if IBM I users adopt these tools, not only do they get these really powerful tools, but it makes it so much easier to hire and recruit new developers.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, how do you mentor or guide customers that you're talking to that, you know, still use PDM and SEU? You know, try something new. Try, you know, I mean, you're a technologist, for goodness sake.
Yeah. So. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I mean, this is what you do, right? It's the what the cobbler's children are the last ones to get new shoes. You guys are the technology people, and you really do. I do talk to IBM users. In fact, I have a blog post you can find somewhere on our website that was called "I've Seen the Enemy and It's Us." And it's, you know, it's the fact that we do what's comfortable. And, you know, I talk to developers, but when I'm in SEU, you know, I'm 25 keystrokes ahead of the screen. I know exactly how to do this and what it's going to do next. And I don't actually have to even look at the screen. And if I have to get to a graphical user interface, you know, I have to get to the mouse and I have to move around and here's why I don't like using it. But on the other hand, there are so many advantages of using those tools and so much power in those tools that if you'd sort of go through the discomfort, and there is discomfort with learning new things. If you go through the discomfort, when you get out the other side, suddenly you go, oh, I would never go back. Once I've gotten there, you just would never go back to the way you used to do things.
Exactly. When I talk to customers who are, you know, going down that modernization path and they have embraced VS Code, Code for I, they're like, I can't believe that for months said I'm never going to look at it. Now they will never go back. You know, they're like, oh, it's such an easy tool to use. It is so good. And I think, you know, when we talk about bridging the gap between traditional and newer, you said it earlier, these are the tools that we need to have in place for young developers to come in and be a part of our teams.
Right. Exactly. If you sit a young developer down at Visual Studio Code, especially with all the stuff that Liam Allen is doing with it now, really, really powerful tools in Visual Studio Code, you sit them down with them, they'll know exactly how to get started because they've been using it all through college. I mean, that's the tools they've been working with. So it just makes that so much easier. And again, like I said, if you've gone to free format RPG code, they can work with the RPG too. I do not believe that RPG is the issue. It's much more the tool set and making sure you have the latest tools available to them.
Yeah, I agree. And then what about, let's talk about, you know, you talked a little bit about Git, but let's talk about, you know, DevOps as well and embracing, you know, that hybrid, you know, everybody who runs the IBM I, and I think if you saw the latest Fortra/Help Systems marketplace survey, you know, there's a few people who only run IBM I. It's pretty rare these days. But, you know, the IBM I is sitting there circled by all these great platforms that they need to have access to. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the biggest things we hear when we hear people saying, you know, we have to leave the platform. It's because, well, it doesn't play in our bigger ecosystem. It doesn't work like everything else. And that's just not true. It can work just like everything else. You can REST service enable your IBM I if you need to access the IBM I via things like REST services. And we talked about before, you can put mobile devices on it. You can have it talk to Internet of Things devices. It can play in that larger infrastructure. The issue has been for IBM I users is to get familiar with how all that works. You know, how do you set up REST services? How do you deal with JSON data and the difference between totally unstructured data and the very, very structured data that the IBM I expects? And how do you do that in a way that performs well enough? But it's, you know, and it's not just in the company's internal network. More and more business today is being done machine to machine. The machines are talking to each other. And if you can't support that kind of an environment, you can't even play. We actually have some customers of ours who are in the, you know, the automobile supply chain, and they've had automobile manufacturers saying, if you want to be in our supply chain, you have to support our APIs. You have to be able to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Over and over and over again. And if you have, you know, retail, financial, manufacturing, you definitely need to know how to play with REST APIs. Absolutely. Everybody's requiring it.
Right. Yeah. And you want to do business with, you know, with Amazon. With eBay, you know, with Shopify. If you want to use these sort of very modern platforms to generate new revenue channels and things like that, it's interesting. You not only have to be able to talk to their REST APIs, one of the other challenges is that you have to be able to use their software development kits, their SDK. So Amazon has written a whole bunch of code for talking to their APIs that they give away free that you can use to help you talk to their APIs. But those things are generally written in JavaScript or Python. They don't write them in RPG. So if you're trying to do all your API calls to Amazon in RPG, you're losing out on all of this code that Amazon provides for you and maintains for you. So you have to figure out, okay, so I don't really want to be calling Amazon APIs directly from RPG. I want to be able to get to them through some kind of a JavaScript layer or a Python layer so I can take advantage of the code that they're giving away.
Okay, so with that said, I want to just say it's okay, IBMers. It's okay to be different. It's okay. I'm sure some people are out there going, oh, but we're so different. It's okay to be different. And it's okay to work with all these other platforms and applications. Okay, back to what you just said. Okay, so if a developer is struggling or having trouble with, you know, understanding how all of this comes together, where would they go to get education? What would you recommend on that? Are there blogs? Are there conversations or presentations where they can hop by and, you know, get some free education on that?
Well, you know, to me, Common is a great opportunity for that. I mean, if you go look at the class list at Common, that's what it's almost completely about, right? There are a few sort of DB2 sessions and RPG, and even those sessions are really focused on new things that you can do. But you know, there's JavaScript sessions, there's Python sessions, there's API sessions, there's Internet of Things sessions. It's a great way to get good education from people who both know the new technology and understand how to talk to IBM I users. So I would certainly think that Common is a great place. You know, the DB2 RPG Summit that's put on by Yang Lai One. you know, John Paris and Susan Gantner and System I Developer. That's another great resource. They do these lunch and learns where they talk about all kinds of new technology. So I think that's another really, really great resource.
Yeah, that one's coming up too. I know that you guys are doing a presentation, but when do they start? Is it in
May. So I know ours is May 9th or something like that.
Okay. Everybody listening, I'll double check those presentations for you. So, and I'll have the link in the show notes so you can click on that to both Common, the next Power Up session, which is coming up at the end of May, and then for John and Susan's System I Developer Lunch and Learns. Those are really good too.
And Peg, you know, podcasts like yours, this podcast is a great way. Listen, you know, spend a little bit of time and hear from different industry experts about their vision. Because I think that's also a really important thing, is to know that there is a vision for the future of the IBMI. I mean, you know, Steve Will presents like a 30-year roadmap for the IBMI. There's a lot of vision out there for where it's going. And you kind of want to be thinking about, okay, so how are we going to take advantage of that? How are we going to get ourselves in a position to take advantage of all this cool stuff that's coming out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for the shout out on the show. Yeah, it's great. And then, I think about when, you know, people come on and share, you know, like Bill Starkey comes on and talks about the power 10 chip, but also talks a little bit about things that they're looking at for the next chip, you know, or Jesse comes on, or Scott and Tim come on and they talk about all of the things that their team or their team members come on and talk too about, you know, things that they're working on. The other thing I like about Common is that face-to-face networking opportunity that presents itself. So if Dan, I know you're not speaking at Power Up, but your son Aaron is. Yep. And I know he's going to be there. But, you know, this is a great opportunity for people to network, talk about how they're doing things, share their ideas. Maybe you have found that REST APIs come easy for you and you want to share your success, get on stage and do that, because it's great. We want to hear from people that are out there doing it every day. So,
yeah, I mean, there is nothing like hearing from somebody who is kind of in the same place you are, but who has done some of these things, because it makes it you see that it's possible. You know, I can do that. I can do that. I can get there. And there's a roadmap that'll help you get there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no different than 30 years ago or 35 years ago when the AS400 came out. You know, people had to learn how to develop and code on it. It's no different today. You need to continue to sharpen your skills, learn new products, learn new, you know, open source solutions, whatever it might be. You need to continue to educate yourself and, you know, really help drive that business forward.
I like to tell RPG programmers, if you can learn RPG, you can easily learn JavaScript and Python. I mean, these languages were built to be easy to learn. RPG has so much more stuff built into it because, you know, it's been around since 1960 or whatever. So these languages are much, much easier to learn. So you can go right, you know, go on YouTube and there's any number of classes on it, or go to Coursera or Udemy or any of those sites. And there are any number of classes that you can take for free or for, you know, for $10 that will give you the basics of working in any of those languages.
Yeah. You just gave me another idea. I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I should fire up my YouTube channel again and have you on just to kind of walk through, you know, setting up a REST API or something.
I mean, a lot of IBMI people are doing that. They put up, you know, they'll put up a little YouTube video to say, you know, here's how to do this particular thing, and they have them out there, and it's great stuff.
I'm all in. Okay, well, we'll take that offline and come up with something, because that'll be really fun.
Great.
And then I I got to keep an eye on the time here, Dan, because you know we're gonna have to start wrapping stuff up. But I want to ask you a question. What advice do you have for young people coming out of university today, who are looking for programming opportunities, or maybe they're thinking about software development themselves and creating products? What advice? You know, you've done things very well. And I know every time I run into somebody who knows you personally, they speak so highly of you. I just want to know, what advice would you give somebody coming out of college today about, you know, the technology and jobs and getting a job?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I think it's really important to understand, if you're, you know, a young developer getting started, you want to understand sort of how computers and how networks work. So not just a programming language that you can go in and do some programming, but understand, how do they work? How do they talk to each other? How does business work? It's really important to understand, you know, why do businesses use computers? What do they do for them? Because if you have that kind of context, you have a lot more opportunity to say, you know, here's where I really would like to be. This is what I want to be involved in. And so in picking a career that will be rewarding for you, you can pick one that will actually allow you to do the kinds of things that you like to do. You know, if you're really, really technical and you like getting into the bits and bytes of things, maybe you want to get involved in operating systems and network security and you know, sort of the really, really fundamental building blocks of our computer systems. Or if you're much more into working with users and user experiences, you know, maybe what you want to do is get involved with user experience design and working with languages like JavaScript and frameworks like Vue and Angular and React for building great user interfaces. So if you get an understanding of what is the whole sort of computing infrastructure look like, you can sort of figure out, okay, so where do I slot in? Where does it make sense for me to do things? And then the other one is obviously the decision that I made, which is to take a look at, what kind of a place do you want to work in? Do you want to work in, you know, a big company? And big, there are great advantages to working in big companies. You know, you got unlimited resources, lots of people you can talk to. You know, you've got lots of mentoring opportunities. Or are you happier in kind of a startup where you don't have a lot of those resources, but everything you do makes a difference? That when you show up to work, it makes a difference from days when you're not there. So, you know, which environment do you like better? What makes more sense to you? Mm-hmm. And I would also say to young people, understanding IBM I technology is a really good idea, because we do have, in the IBM I world, we have a challenge facing us, which is a lot of our experts are my age and are not going to be doing this for a lot longer. And we're going to need the next generation of people to come up who can maintain these systems. And these systems are running, you know, in the largest banks, insurance companies, manufacturers, you know, healthcare systems, distributors, logistics, all throughout industry.
Everything.
And they're there, and they're going to be there. Don't believe anybody who tells you that they're not going to be there. They are going to be there, and they're going to be there for a long time. So understanding that technology, even if what you end up doing is JavaScript development for the IBM I, it sure helps to understand it, because we run into too many shops where there's this divide between the open source people and the IBM I people, and they don't understand each other.
And
I think there's a real opportunity there for people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that one, Dan.
Yeah. And we are seeing, you know, we're seeing some programs around that. And I think it's really great, because, again, the IBM I is everywhere. It's in exciting industries doing really interesting things. And if you can bring an understanding of the IBM I along with an understanding of the new technology, you become that kind of unicorn. That's very, very valuable.
I love that. Yeah. Who doesn't want to be a unicorn?
Exactly.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you for that. I I really, really do value your opinion there. And I think that that's really, really good advice. So thank you for that. You know, this, you know, just understanding the skills gap and, you know, making sure that folks, young ones coming out of college today know that this is a viable platform and they should embrace it with big open arms. So,
right. And very interesting things are going on there. I mean, we have customers doing really cool stuff with their IBMIs.
Yeah. All day long.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All right. So I asked that last question, but here is an opportunity for you just to give any last thoughts on things that we didn't cover, things that are kind of eating at you that you want to share with our listeners today.
Yeah. My biggest thing, I think, and we did touch on this, is for IBMI users to proactively embrace the new technology. So it will represent changes. You know, working with Git is very different than working with, you know, Alden or Turnover or Implementer, Midrange Dynamics, you know, all of the traditional IBMI tools. It's a different way of thinking. Now, most of those vendors are also providing Git kind of interfaces, but you want to understand how does Git work? And it's different. It works differently than those tools do. So I would say get out there and you know, get on YouTube. There are thousands and thousands of videos on how these things work and how you can use them in your environment. So I would learn that. I'd learn the basics of REST APIs, because if you can surround your IBMI system with REST APIs, it suddenly becomes open to the world. And if you can learn how to use REST APIs, you now have literally millions of open source modules that you can call to integrate into your system and take advantage of that. You know, one of the reasons that other platforms can develop things more quickly is instead of writing code, they just go out and say, well, did somebody already write this? And then they just go grab a module and stick it in.
That's the consuming piece of right?
Exactly. The consuming piece where you can go and say, gee, I want to be able to take IBMI structured data and put it into an existing PDF document. Well, guess what? There's a module that does that. You don't have to write anything. You just go get the module, give it the data, and it'll generate the PDF document for you. Mm-hmm. So, and it'll go the other way as well. It'll go read the PDF document, and pull the data out of it. So you don't have to write code to do stuff like that. You can just go out and get it. So again, I would really encourage people to explore the technology and play around with things and see how might this help our business, because your business is dependent on you to help guide them from a technology perspective. They rely on you. You're the technologist.
Yeah, absolutely. Go have some fun. Go have some fun with it.
Yeah, I just had a very cool one with AI that I hadn't even thought of, that somebody just mentioned to me in passing. They said, oh, yeah, I use AI for thank you notes. I went, that's interesting. So I went to ChatGPT and I said, you know, write a thank you note to a customer who's been a loyal customer of mine for several years, and they're using our software to do API development. And ChatGPT spit out this beautiful personalized letter to the customer with the points that I had mentioned integrated into the letter. And so what you can do is you can actually programmatically feed it the data and it will generate thank you notes.
Oh, fantastic.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's such a great idea. I'll have to go check that out. I haven't
Just go to ChatGPT and key it in.
I don't know. Some of the API stuff out there makes me, and sorry, not API. AI stuff
makes me a little
nervous, but
yes, I agree.
Yeah, it's all good though. Yeah.
Yep.
So wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dan, for an enlightening conversation. You are, amazing. You are an amazing person. Thank you for your rich background and all of the great things that you're doing in the IBM community. It's so wonderful. Thank you.
Well, Peg, thank you. And thank you for doing the podcast. I think, again, as we talked about earlier, it's great to have these kind of resources in the IBMI world.
Yeah. You're welcome. Let's keep it going.
Yes.
I got to get the YouTube. And my other idea was iBytes, little technical bites that I want to release like a couple each week. So they're only like 2 or 3 minutes. So that's on my list.
I think that's, given the attention span of young people today, I think that's probably a really good idea.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So Dan, we are just at the end of the show, but before we let you go, what is your one incredible thing this week?
So my incredible thing this week is actually from last week, last week I got to do what my favorite thing is, and that is we went on a family vacation. So I have 4 kids and 3 grandkids, and we rented a house out on Long Island, and we all came together to hang out for a week, and it was just the best time. You know, we went into New York to see some shows. We saw Sweeney Todd, and we saw Spamalot, and just got to spend time together as a family. And it is absolutely the best thing ever. I loved it.
Oh, good for you. Oh, I love that. What a great one incredible thing.
Thank you. I thought it was totally incredible.
Yeah. So on Long Island, what little town were you in?
So we were in Valley Stream. And we chose it because it's a very pretty place, and it's got little parks for the kids to play and walk around in, but it's also right next to a LIRR station. So we could be in the city in a half hour.
Oh, and, fantastic. So
we had kind of the benefits of being in a more suburban environment, but also the ability to go in and enjoy the restaurants and the shows and all the things we love about Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always think about like spring break right at this time of the year. And so were you able to hit the beach at all or go to a pool or anything?
My family, well, I shouldn't say my whole family, most of my family, we're not really beach people. So my wife and I, for our honeymoon, went to Manhattan. So we saw 12 shows in 10 days. So we thrive more in a kind of a city environment than the beach environment. So we don't do the beach a whole lot.
Okay. That's fair. That sounds like an amazing honeymoon too. Wow. That's a lot of shows.
we're very big theater people. Yeah. I mean, I've lived on the West Coast of the US my whole life almost my whole life. And I've never been to Hawaii. So.
Oh, maybe that's is that on your bucket list? Maybe.
Yeah. Someday I would love to go there. Actually, here the hiking there is amazing. So yeah. I would love to do that.
Yeah, that would be great. So, well, Dan, I love your one incredible thing. That's great. Family vacation. That's wonderful. Yeah. So good for you. I know you got a little cold from that. So make sure you take care of yourself. So
no problem.
Yeah. So my one incredible thing, I just got to give a little shout out to all of the people out there who provide services, handyman services, things that you need to have done around your house, or just any of those types of things that I just think about things I can't do myself, or, you know, things that my husband doesn't want to do. My one incredible thing are the handy guys that I've had around the house doing all of like the trim painting on the house, fixing our fence, doing things as we get ready to sell our house. So my one incredible thing is a huge shout out to all the handy men and women out there who are making life easier for people like me.
Wow. I think I agree. That is for me, who I am, like the least handy person in the world. yes, I agree 100%. My wife wants a new appliance. She just asked me to try to fix the one she has, and she knows I'll break it so that she'll have to get a new one.
Yeah. So, there you go. She knows what she's doing.
Exactly. So yes, I think that's a great shout out because I agree with you.
Just, it's great to have people come by and go, yeah, I can help you with that.
I can fix that.
I can fix that. No problem. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Yes. I try to do, some of the basic things myself, but there are things that I need help with. And my husband's the same way too. He's like, well, I can do that, but I can't do that. So let's hire somebody. I'm like, okay.
Right. I agree. Actually, there was an article, I think it was maybe in the Wall Street Journal. There's an article like yesterday about how kids are starting to forego college and going to trade schools to learn, you know, to be electricians and plumbers because there's such a shortage right now of people who can do that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And college is ridiculously expensive. So.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, Dan, for joining me on the Incredible Eye Show. It was an absolute pleasure to have you here. I can't wait till we get back together again.
Peg, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you on the show. We'd like to take a moment here to thank our sponsors. The Incredible Eye Show is sponsored by In4. In 2024, In4 is revolutionizing the IBM Eye user experience. Join In4 for an 8-part fireside chat series as they uncover the best modernization practices for LX, XA, System 21, and other IBM Eye platform customers. Inspired by success stories worldwide, you'll hear from customers on their journey, unlocking system potential for evolving business needs. To learn more, visit infor.com/IBMI. Common is a community that wants to bring together new and experienced tech professionals. With a growing content library full of expert knowledge, Common wants to make an accessible place for people to learn, engage, and grow. They're currently releasing weekly videos of their latest bootcamp, I Begin, which takes things back to the fundamental level, encouraging everyone in their journey to take those first steps into transforming their professional career. If you want to learn more about Common, you can check out their website at common.org or join them live and in person in Fort Worth at the Power Up 2024 conference, where there will be tons of tech experts coming together to mingle and share their experiences. Join Common today and become a part of their community. Are you ready to unlock the possibilities of hybrid cloud for your IBM I systems? Meet Connectria, a leading IBM I cloud and managed services provider with more than 25 years of experience delivering managed and professional services focused on hybrid cloud, transformation, DR, modernization, and more. Connectria isn't just a service provider. They're your dedicated team for innovative, reliable, and secure solutions that seamlessly connect today's technology with tomorrow's possibilities. Discover the Connectria difference with their hybrid solution for IBM Power and AWS, a powerful way to accelerate modernization with the possibilities of AWS. Don't miss out on the incredible potential of hybrid cloud for IBM I workloads. Visit Connectria.com to learn more and unlock the power of your IBM I today. Businesses large and small trust software and services from Midrange Dynamics North America to evolve their IT strategies and enhance productivity. MD Change manages code changes so projects move smoothly to production. MD Pipeline orchestrates and integrates CI/CD pipelines, helping you deliver DevOps to meet IT modernization goals. MD Rapid reduces database downtime from hours to minutes. IBM I developers can create fast and secure REST APIs using MD REST for I. You build great software, our tools make it easier. Visit our website, md-na.com, to harness the power of the right tool.